the Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. This is Ellen Kamai, the Natural Nurse. And along with my co-host, Dr. Eugene Zamperone, we bring you the Natural Nurse and Dr. Z every Tuesday, 10 a.m. to 11 a.m., right here on Progressive Radio Network. One of the reasons that I do like Progressive Radio Network is because of the archive, because the archive allows you to tune in anytime, day or night. Let's say you hear something on our show today that you go, wow, I'd really like to go back and hear that again, or there's a phone number that I want to catch, or this would be perfect for my friend. They really should know about what's going on here. Well, you can come back anytime. You just go to prn.fm and then click on shows and scroll down alphabetically to N, N for Nancy and N for Natural Nurse. And when you click on that, the latest show will come up, which I just think is a wonderful service. But not only is that true for the Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, it's actually true for all the shows that are available right here on Progressive Radio Network. So that's a good thing, and we'd love to bring you this information. Now, today's guest is Dr. Alan Dattner. He is a medical doctor, and he has been a pioneer for over 30 years in integrating nutrition, applied kinesiology, and holistic medicine into the practice of dermatology, which I think is fantastic. In the many years, we have been bringing you radio, Dr. Zamperone and I have been bringing you radio since the late 1970s, believe it or not, we have actually never had a natural dermatologist on air. So I am so excited to have Dr. Dattner on today. He's a board-certified dermatologist, and he's written a number of scientific articles on nutrition and herbal medicine as it relates to dermatology, and he has lectured locally, nationally, and internationally to both dermatology and CAM organizations, CAM being alternative medicine, complementary and alternative medicine, and has been quoted in numerous popular magazines as well as the New York Times. He has a strong background in conventional research methodology and 47 years of experience in the science of cellular immunology. So we are very, very happy to have him on board as our guest today. I want you to know that we're focusing on a new book that should be in your library. It's called Radiant Skin, From the Inside Out, The Holistic Dermatologist's Guide to Natural Skincare. So thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Dattner.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me on your show. I really appreciate this opportunity to tell people more about the options for treatment for skin disorders and indeed for any kind of inflammatory disorders using natural methodology.
I'm excited about that topic. I want to go back in time a little bit, Dr. Dattner, and tell us what made you decide to become a dermatologist in the first place.
Well, there were many different factors, some of which you might find humorous and some which were really crucial. In my early days of training as a general practitioner, I found the call schedule to be overbearing. Being at a small hospital in California where one physician would have the entire hospital from midnight on and, 123 beds and busy highways with crashes in their emergency room, it was a little bit overwhelming, and I didn't see that as something I could sustain. The second thing was that dermatology offered a lot of possibilities for different fields of interest that I had. Certainly psychosomatics was one, because a lot of people have emotional issues that show up in the skin. immunology was a big one, and I got involved in immunology very early on, as you mentioned. Before I even got into medical school, I started spending time in a laboratory at what was a small place then called Sloan Kettering, and in a laboratory where they were doing immunology with Lloyd Old, who was been proclaimed by many people to be the father of tumor immunology. So my immunology interests were there, the psychosomatic interests were there, and the medicine and diagnostic parts were all there. So
yeah,
those were
so that was
that
all
led me to
in
dermatology.
Conventional research.
Ah, well, let me tell you that I was in several different laboratories, all of which were doing cellular immunology. That is, looking at how lymphocytes rather than antibodies were behaving. And my last one was at the dermatology branch of the National Cancer Institute. And there we were doing work on how the immune cells recognized different substances, bacterial substances, chemicals, and how they differentiated. And when our data started pouring forth showing that there was a requirement for self antigens as well as for the specific chemical, I began to recognize the unique specificity that was involved in any inflammatory response. So that was very exciting. And so all the things I'd heard when I was in California hearing all the, you know, the latest about nutrition and healing began to make sense, that I understood that there was a specific equation. So whereas a strep infection could cause a psoriasis outbreak in one person, it wouldn't in another, for very good reasons that were based on immunological principles.
Right, and sometimes that, genetics, like Dr. Alan Ebinger pointed out, in terms of the what you said, I just want to repeat that you talked about self-recognition and the autoimmune component. That is so important, and usually, mm-hmm. as far as I've been in this field for many years, I don't see most dermatologists addressing that.
Well, that was the other thing that got me. When I got involved in dermatology, read a book and you'd say, well, the person has this kind of condition, and we know it might have been associated with tick bites or this or that, but we don't know the cause. And part of the problem was that the model that took us out of the dark ages, the disease model, also put us into a mental straitjacket, and so that people in the Western culture who had looked at somebody as having a disease thought of that disease as being kind of a single entity. And as you probably, I'm sure you know from looking at other healing systems like Chinese medicine, a given skin disease would really be broken up into many different possibilities according to other characteristics of that individual. They arrive at what looks like the same problem, but the way they get there is very different. And so for different people, it could be sensitization to different foodstuffs, bacteria, viruses, self-antigens that can lead to the severe attack that gives the inflammation that manifests as a skin problem or indeed any other inflammation.
So that is just, you know, it's not, I have to say, it's not groundbreaking, because you're talking about, what, 20 or 30 years ago that you were involved in the research. So well, it has been known in science, and there's so much published on something like PubMed that anyone can look up, and yet so many physicians don't seem to be aware of this scientific evidence-based phenomena.
I think that's true. Well, to just say the groundbreaking part is that the transplantation antigen or immunogenetic specificity of antigen recognition was indeed the subject of two Nobel Prizes. One was Banasarev in 1980, and the other was Daugherty and Zinkernagel in 1996.
Wow, thank you so much, Doctor. I just want to ask you, Dr. Allen, I just want to ask you to do one thing. I love what you just said, and for me, that is completely enlightening. Can you just describe in, let's say, more layman's friendly terms what that might mean that he received the Nobel Prize for?
Well, what that means is that if you have a particular antigenic type, let me give an example. There was a breakout of some kind of Klebsiella or other Enterobacter on an aircraft carrier in which there were almost 2,000 men aboard. About 26, if I remember correctly, developed ankylosing spondylitis. All of those had a specific transplantation antigen type. I think it was HLA-27, if I remember correctly.
It is, yeah. It's a gene.
Yeah,
right.
And so it was the combination of that allergen, something from that bacteria presented by the HLA-27 that looked like their spinal tissue and caused that outbreak. It took so both types of specificity were necessary for that reaction. So that's a kind of an example of how this is. So what it is that your immune system sees these various foreign invaders in the context of the hand that's holding them. The hand is your specific type. And that type could be even more specific in terms of your HLA-27 on your kidney or on some other organ that has its own specificities.
So that's just such amazing information. And here it is in mainstream literature, and yet so many people who present at a dermatologist with some kind of skin issue will just be given cortisone cream without any genetic testing.
Well, it's, you know, the genetic testing usually comes after. What it really takes, unfortunately, is a very detailed history to understand what is going on. And we are in an era in which the insurance companies have consistently tightened the screws in terms of what they compensate. So to take the kind of time to get answers, not just the first set of answers, but to keep digging and find out what went on before somebody had an outbreak is almost impossible in a conventional model.
It is, because you're talking about 2 or 3 hours.
Well, at least an hour. And, you know, in a dermatology model, people spend somewhere between 3 and 20 minutes usually for a visit.
20 minutes is long. It's usually the doctor comes in, he looks at what you go, doctor, this is it on my skin, and they look at it. And, you know, thank God they do have a lot of knowledge about what it might be, so they can sometimes very quickly tell you, well, it's not cancer. That relieves a lot of people. And they say, you know, here's a cortisone cream, write a script, and or maybe do minor surgery to take something off. Which is
right,
a wonderful service. I'm not saying, you know, it's just not enough, and it's not looking for the cause like you do and like you describe in your fabulous book, which is called Radiant Skin. And, boy, it's a radiant book. The cover of this book is just anybody would want to look like that girl. Just
right.
Beautiful. Radiant
right,
skin
exactly.
From the inside out.
Well, it's really very exciting to have finally come out with this book. And just to make a note about the work that we did. As I mentioned, one of the Nobel Prizes, which was done with similar work, wasn't issued until 1996. We did this work in the late 1970s. The other thing that was interesting is that the description of these relationships didn't come out in the relationships between specific bacteria or viruses and the cross-reactive stimuli or molecular mimicry leading to a specific disease didn't come out until the very last issue in December 1999 of the New England Journal of Medicine. So it was over 20 years before the kind of things that we were seeing actually appeared in a major medical journal with a little bit more specificity to it. So it's been very slow getting that information in. So between that and the complication involved, it's not an easy concept to get. It's a two-hit concept. It's not a one-hit concept. And to get a history and understand how somebody got to a stimulation that caused that inflammation takes a lot of the information gathering to see how all the pieces line up. And that's the most important thing that I do in my diagnostic work. The laboratory confirmation can be very useful afterwards. Now, I will say to the credit of dermatologists that when it comes to contact sensitivity, you know, identifying something that somebody's allergic to, the combination between the pattern, the history, and the possible patch testing does lead to very good diagnostic work.
Oh, absolutely. But, and like I said, you know, real relief in terms of finding out what is this.
Yeah. And sometimes, unfortunately, in finding out that somebody can't continue in the line of work they're in.
You know what? Could you elucidate on that? That is so true. Like,
well,
let's say they have a sensitivity to hairspray and they're a hairdresser.
Yeah. I had a patient who, way back in my regular practice, who was having trouble when she started working in a hair salon, and she had just finished her training, and she was trying to make an income. And we did patch testing. We found out that she could not be around the two-part process for doing permanence. I still can remember the awful smell of my grandmother.
Yeah, they used ammonia.
Things.
Yes.
It was worse. It was something else besides ammonia. It was really horrendous. And she, but she could be in a salon where they had the one part one, and we got that on the patch testing, and so she was able to find a salon that only worked with the kind that she could deal with.
Wow, great detective work. Can we talk about that a little bit more? So this patient came to you because
mm-hmm. She was developing a dermatitis.
Okay.
A rash. I believe it was on her hands. I will tell you it's been probably 25 or 30 years. So
that's
okay. Exactly.
And then, you know, most dermatologists aren't even going to, like, try to track down where you work.
Well, maybe. You know, a dermatologist who specialized in contact dermatitis would have done well with her. But not everybody takes the time. But what was, as I mentioned, what was really wonderful was here that I was able to distinguish between which allergen she could handle and which she couldn't. Where my work comes in even more is that I do a lot of work with the digestive system. Because this is the biggest source of foreign materials coming in. So when the rash is coming from the inside, it's really important to see what might be causing things. And here we have a complex network of issues that lead to the rash that people get. It's not just one thing. So this is where it becomes more complicated, because you've got to identify and deal with all the pieces. Just like, you know, when you put a wheel back on a car, you've got six nuts to tighten, not one, and you've got to do each one a little bit. If you do all one, the wheel doesn't go on right. Well, in the case of treating somebody with an allergy coming from things that they're eating or things living in their gut or leaky gut, you've got to deal with all of those issues in the proper sequence.
So this woman came in, you saw her skin. And
yes.
Then what made you suspect or even be able to confirm that there this specific information, which we do all the time in natural medicine? I've been doing this since 1964. Mm-hmm. And I want you to describe how you even went about looking into the fact that one kind of permanent she was very sensitive to, and a different kind she was able to tolerate and continue her life's work.
Well, the first thing was the history. Now, with a contact allergy, it's usually a delayed hypersensitivity. That's what lymphocytes do. And a delayed hypersensitivity reaction, like poison ivy, you brush the poison ivy and it's usually 48 hours before you break out. So with her, the rash didn't occur right away when she started working in the salon. It took a couple days. So that was the first hint. And then the location was important, because we could see it was on places where she would have been touching the permanent solution or touching the client's hair. So having seen that, we got her away from where she was working for long enough that she could calm down, and then put patch tests on her back with a number of different compounds, including ones that were present in one type and the other type of permanent solution. And read that 72 hours later, giving time for this delayed hypersensitivity to occur. It's not immediate. And we could see that the two-part compounds were the ones that were causing trouble, but the one-part one didn't give her a red rash underneath the tape and Band-Aid. And so we could see that one was causing trouble and the other wasn't.
You know, that is a great case. I wish you took pictures of it and, you know, did a whole paper on that, because look how, and you know, it's so big. Like, not only did you track down the cause of her annoying dermatitis, you actually, I think, gave her information that she could use to help in terms of her career.
Exactly. It was very exciting, because she was able to then take the training she had just really spent a big investment on and go to work instead of being out on the street.
Right, or being just a greeter at Walmart or something, which is a nice thing to do too. I'm just saying she had planned on being a beautician, and this issue would have actually trumped that, except you, in that exquisite tearing as a doctor, the way you're supposed to be, plus the techniques that you had opened yourself up to through evidence-based participation as a researcher and a scientist, knowing that it could be a specific compound, not just tell her, oh, well, you can't be a beautician, or just put cortisone cream and keep doing what you're doing.
Exactly.
That is just so fantastic. And if you're all interested in learning more, we're going to take a short break right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, but we're going to hear about the Natural Medicine Chest. But I do want to remind you, you are listening to Dr. Alan Dattner. That's Dattner, MD, Integrative Medicine and Dermatology Specialist. And his website, holisticdermatology.com, and his book, Radiant Skin, From the Inside Out. You will want a copy of this. We will be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
On this edition of The Natural Medicine Chest, we'll discuss the essential oil taken from the Australian tea tree.
The tea tree, known as Melaleuca alternifolia, grows in only one region of the world, the northeast corner of Australia. It is a full-sized tree of the myrtle family, whose oil has powerful abilities to clean and help heal wounds and skin ailments such as cuts, burns, and rashes. In 1770, the infamous Captain Cook was a lieutenant in the British Royal Navy when his ship landed in Australia. The botanist on board, Sir Joseph Banks, collected samples of a sticky aromatic leaf and brought them back to England for further investigation.
In 1923, an Australian curator and chemist, Dr. Penfold, conducted a study on tea tree leaves and discovered that their essential oils are 13 times stronger as an antiseptic bactericide than carbolic acid, considered the standard in the early 1900s. The oil contains 50 to 60% terpenes, 6 to 8% cineol, which causes its camphor-like odor, and several kinds of alcohols. In 1933, the Australian Journal of Pharmacy, the American Journal of the National Medical Association, and the British Medical Journal reported that tea tree oil is a powerful disinfectant, non-poisonous, non-irritating, and has been used successfully in a very wide range of septic conditions. Australian tea tree oil is mentioned in the British Pharmaceutical Codex of 1949, the UK Medicine List, and the Dispensary of the United States.
During World War II, tea tree oil was considered a standard issue item for all first aid kits for Army and Navy units in tropical regions. The demand for tea tree oil exceeded the supply. However, after World War II, synthetic drugs gained in popularity and the use of tea tree oil in medicine waned. In more recent times, a renewed interest in natural, non-toxic alternatives has triggered a resurgence in tea tree oil research. In 1985, Dr. Paul Belacher, chief of the phytotherapy department at the Faculty of Medicine, University of Paris, worked on several double-blind studies involving tea tree oil and its application as a remedy for candidiasis, chronic cystitis, staph and strep infections, and nail bed fungus. He stated, and we quote, "The essential oil of Melaleuca has entered the team of major essential oils and emerges as an antiseptic and antifungal weapon of the first order in phytoaromatherapy."
Try a few drops of tea tree oil in a steam vaporizer and inhale for blocked sinuses, or rub the oil on chest and back for a cough. The Australian Journal of Dentistry reported that using tea tree oil in dental hygiene and in surgery showed it to be an extremely effective antiseptic. Add a drop on your toothbrush or include it as a gargle and mouthwash. Tea tree oil can be applied directly to the skin. Although it's possible that some people may experience a mild allergic reaction, in-depth research has shown tea tree oil to be non-irritating and safe.
So, listeners, think about including tea tree oil, the first aid kit in a bottle, in your natural medicine chest.
Welcome back. This is Ellen Kamai, the natural nurse, inviting you to join us as we continue our discussion here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. I'd like you to know that we love your comments, and you can always come on board at naturalnurse.com or Facebook, The Natural Nurse, and let us know what you'd like to hear about on our radio shows. In addition, we have lots of opportunities, educational opportunities for all. We have CE accredited courses that are for nurses, midwives, acupuncturists, massage therapists, and dietitians. Those are CE certified courses, which, by the way, you can take just for your own information. If you're not needing any kind of CE certificates, you can still take the classes, and we offer them in herbs, homeopathy, aromatherapy, nutrition, all kinds of aspects of holistic medicine, and they are offered online. You could see more at naturalnurse.com, click on education, and then we usually have a phone discussion to see what your specific needs are. We also have many on-ground classes. That's where we meet up face-to-face, and we take people on tours. Our up-and-coming tour, March 12th, goes to the island of Jamaica, where you do a four-day retreat with shamanic indigenous healers. And Dr. Zamperone and I have been offering that class for, I think this is our 27th year. So we have a fantastic time. We call it an education vacation because you do have fun, but also you get college credits. So you can find out more about that as well. So thank you so much for everything that you do to learn more about holistic wellness. And we'd like to bring back on board our wonderful guest today, Dr. Alan Dattner, integrative dermatologist, and he has a long and very beautiful introduction of all the work that he has done. He is board certified. He's written a number of scientific articles on nutrition and herbal medicine in dermatology, and he was really involved for years and elucidated key concepts linking environmental factors to inflammatory disease, and investigated human lymphocyte recognition at the National Cancer Institute. So we are very, very pleased to have Dr. Dattner with us today. Thank you so much for being our guest, Dr. Dattner.
Oh, thank you so much for inviting me here and having me on the show.
Now, Let's talk about what happens when, you know, you still have a clinic. I think you have clinics in two locations. You can tell
well,
us
I have a
where.
Practice. Yes, I have a practice in Manhattan and in New Rochelle.
Okay. Great. And so you are actively still seeing patients as well as being an author and a researcher.
That's correct.
So you're a busy person.
I would say so. Yes.
And so now when someone comes to your office, do you get patients who are seeking your kind of expertise, like they heard about you, or do you get people just who have a skin rash and find you?
No, I get mostly people who are specifically seeking the kind of help that I can give, and usually for two reasons. One, because they are either in the field of holistic work of some kind, or they have very strong preferences and don't want to use conventional care. And that's one group. And the other group are people who've completely fallen through the cracks of medicine, and they've been treated by every kind of specialist, or at least some kinds of specialists. Sometimes they've gone to the head of the department at this or that hospital or medical center, and they've gone to the naturopath and the acupuncturist, and nobody has been able to put things together for them. And they have a problem that is either very personally bothersome or is extremely problematic. So personally bothersome might be acne or other kinds of rashes or dandruff or severe itching, and problematic could be something that has a chance of turning in, could be autoimmune or something that has a chance of turning into a cancer if untreated, and has dangerous drugs or dangerous and expensive drugs and risky drugs that are the alternative that are being offered to them.
So do you mean something like the biologics?
Exactly.
That they're using now with psoriasis, I believe.
Exactly. And the biologics.
What is the risk-benefit ratio there, doctor, in your opinion? Because if you're looking at something like psoriasis, it is annoying, but is it deadly enough to require a drug that potentially is deadly?
I think that that's an individual case issue. I think that if somebody has psoriatic arthritis, and they're facing the possibility of being crippled and not being able to live a normal life, then they're probably willing to do the Russian roulette and take a chance. If it's somebody who is suicidal because of their psoriasis and they don't have the resources to find people who can do some of the kinds of work that I can do, or they don't succeed because of one reason or another, then I think that the ratio is in the favor of considering those drugs. But if the psoriasis is just bothersome and they don't kind of like the way it looks, but it's not something that they're going to jump off a cliff about, I think it's really worthwhile trying other means, and I think that the risk-benefit ratio is against the use of that. But people are also using, some other, and before the biologics, some other things which are fairly toxic, like methotrexate, and again, it's the same issue. If it's going to cripple somebody, then maybe it's worth taking the chance. But I do know that people have died from using, for instance, methotrexate, and there have been some nasty problems from the biologics.
That's so true. Now, I'll tell you, I have seen, since we're discussing psoriasis in particular, I worked with Dr. Serafina Corsello. I don't know if you were familiar with her.
I knew her, yes.
Okay, so I was her head nurse for 23 years.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. So I saw every patient she did. And I cannot tell you the number of patients who came in with psoriasis being usually one of a plethora of symptoms, because it's always linked to something that you talked about, leaky gut syndrome, and all. It's usually a whole lot of things, because we test for heavy metals, and, a whole array leads to this dysfunctional issue. And I cannot tell you how many patients it was wonderful to see. They watched their psoriasis go from red and crusty to a few months into the program, you know, just a light red rash to complete disappearance, and it was, they would cry. They would just cry. Of course, these are things that we did, but truthfully, it's what the patient does through education, which involved a change in diet, a change in lifestyle, you know, a lot of things that they had to initiate, as well as any interventions that we did, often intravenously or taking herbs, et cetera. So it was so wonderful to watch the disappearance. And the other thing they learned, I have to say, with the psoriasis patients in particular, is later on when they sort of were fine and psoriasis was gone, they would experience a resurfacing of the psoriasis, and they could link it to the fact that, oh, well, it was Christmas season, so they went off their diet, or, you know, something happened, they got a divorce, and it was very stressful, and they could watch it come back out, and then they could actually participate in regressing it again by being more strict on their program. Just fantastic.
Yes, it's amazing how when people who have to struggle to make the changes have a clear field, they can see what's going on when they cheat off their program to an excess, and they have that information. It's not that you have to tell them as a physician anymore. They have to live with, I did this and that happened again. And it's a very powerful motivator to resume a program that keeps them under control, and to reinforce the understanding and information that's been presented to them. As a matter of fact, that's one reason I wrote this book, is that, you know, so many people these days will look on the blogosphere, they'll look on the internet and they see this person, you know, ate choke cherries and their, you know, their condition cleared. And it may have been so, but to understand the relationships immunologically between what's going on with a given program for yourself that may be different from that person on the internet is so important. So to understand how the immune system is working, to understand all these different things that you were mentioning with the diet, and I think we've sort of touched on leaky gut and allergen exposure and perhaps heavy metals, to understand how all those may be having an interplay is very important. So I think the more the patient knows, the better, because as you know, you present the information to the patient. They make the choice, and when they're at the supermarket, when they're at the restaurant, they make the final choice as to what they're going to put into their mouths. And the more information they have, the better decision they can make.
Right, and sometimes people have to start off on an extremely restricted eating program, et cetera, and they can't dye their hair anymore like you brought up earlier.
Yeah.
You know, it's really looking at your lifestyle. And one thing I used to tell people about, because we love to bring humor into our interventions as well, and we actually had, well, in those days we had a VCR in the office. It's a while ago, I admit. And we'd actually put on a movie by Lily Tomlin called The Incredible Shrinking Woman. Mm-hmm. And what went on in that movie, anyone can, of course, watch it now, is that she started her day with, like, artificial sweeteners, and then she put on hairspray, and then she did this and that. You know, they really focused on all these chemicals that she just used in her daily life as a normal morning. And then when she went to the dry cleaners, she walked in, and there was a big puff of that highly toxic butylated toluene or whatever they're using there in the dry cleaners. And that was kind of the last straw that initiated that process where, if those of you saw the movie, she shrunk down into this teeny girl. But it really did show what you're talking about, where there was a layering process of insults. So it's very hard to say this one thing causes it.
Exactly. Well, you know, it's interesting that you mentioned incredible shrinking. You know, a lot of the recommendations that come through in the common literature and sometimes from physicians is, you know, eat a healthy, normal American diet. Well, an article just came out that came around through our holistic network, which described, and this is in the peer-reviewed literature, described that the normal American diet seems to be correlated with smaller size of a portion of the brain. than a more healthy diet.
Oh, my goodness. I have to get
smaller
that reference. I'm a reference
smaller,
junkie.
I'll have to find it for you and I'll send it. Smaller hippocampal size in people having the normal American diet.
Wow.
Can you imagine?
And
so
I am so
we are the incredible shrinking subspecies now.
Wow. That I'm definitely going to have that because I'm a junkie for articles, and then as I go around lecturing, really at medical schools more and more now, because I lecture a lot on drug nutrient depletions and herb drug mm-hmm. interactions. So I love to have these kinds of studies because when, as you know, you present to a medical audience, you have to be evidence-based. You can't be like the blogosphere saying, I drank cranberry juice and my psoriasis cleared up. And usually that's not
right.
even true.
Yeah.
It's very multifaceted.
And of course, you compound that with the 3,000 different additives that are legal to put in foods today, the lead and other toxins that are seeping in, which have been correlated with, for instance, decreased IQ, we are losing our mental capacity as a nation due to a lot of these various toxic substances. So we're getting smaller brains, less capacity, and we're wondering why we're having such a hard time. So it's, you know, when you start doing holistic care, you can't help but notice certain things. And what's very exciting for me is having a patient, and when they really grab the program and start doing well with it, other things improve. I think there were some stories in my book, but I just want to share one with you. I had a young woman who was a serious athlete, but she had cystic acne and either didn't succeed with Accutane or didn't want to do it. And we were able to get her under control. And not only did we get her under control, but at one point she mentioned to me, you know, I've been improving my times with my running, but since we did these other things, my time in the 10-mile run was decreased by a minute and 20 seconds per mile. Now, if you know applied kinesiology, you know that the quads, which I fix when I fix the digestive system, improve their performance when you get the small intestinal digestion working better. So we got this woman to knock a minute and 20 seconds off. Now, part of it was her conditioning, but you don't knock that much off in a short period of time. With the conditioning. So this is somebody who had increased health benefits. Some people I've seen other people with problems that go away, allergies, all kinds of other things they didn't even know they had while we're fixing the so-called skin problem that they came in for. So when you get at the underlying problems that are going on with people, all kinds of amazing things happen. Things that they thought that's how they were. Some people think waking up with a stuffed nose every morning is normal. And when that goes away, they say, gee, that was great. Or they always are dragging at night and that they get energy back that they never had. And, you know, it changes their life. They have
and these are the side
extra
effects.
Hours every
you know,
day.
These are the side effects of natural
yeah,
medicine, just what you
exactly.
said. Okay, so we're treating the skin because since you're a dermatologist, that's going to be your window into working with that person, while
exactly.
a gastroenterologist might be, you know, digestive issues. But whichever way we do it, a holistic program, the adverse or the other effects, let's call them, is that then your digestive skin, even you came in to a skin doctor, but through his ministrations in a program like you set up, Dr. Dattner, then their digestion improves and their running time gets, you know, it's just all good, which is
exactly.
so exciting and which is why I think this is not alternative medicine, it's not complementary medicine, it's good medicine. It's correct evidence-based medicine. And we are going to have to take another little hiatus right here. But when we come back, we will be continuing our discussion with Dr. Alan Dattner, MD, Integrative Medicine and Dermatology. And find him at holisticdermatology.com. And that's a good place to go for an appointment, or for a consultation, or to find out what's up with your skin or your child's acne instead of letting them just take antibiotics and get all kinds of side effects. And when we come back, we will be continuing our discussion. So we'll be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
The Dr. Peter Breggin Hour interviews the most exciting innovators in the field of mental health, from therapists and researchers to advocates of patient rights. Join me and other pioneers in psychology, psychiatry, and empathic living with the aim of improving your life and the lives of everyone you touch. Wednesdays at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. Listen live or on the archives 24/7 at PRN.fm. Don't forget to rate the show on iTunes. The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you are coming with us.
This is Guy McPherson. Join me and Mike Sliva with Nature Bats Last Radio on PRN.fm. Catch us Tuesday evening at 8 p.m. on the East Coast. You can rate the show on iTunes, and if you don't catch us live, you can catch us 24/7 in the PRN archives. That's 8 p.m. Eastern Time with Nature Bats Last on PRN.fm.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. Normally, you would hear the Progressive Commentary Hour Monday evenings, 7 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. However, as of today, we're going to be having it every Tuesday, 7 to 8 p.m. So just change your calendar, please. Change your schedule. Tuesday, 7 to 8 for the Progressive Commentary Hour.
Stay tuned to PRN.fm for more empowering ideas from progressive voices. We're moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
Welcome back once again to more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And we are having a very fascinating discussion today. At least for me, it's fascinating, and I hope it is for you listeners, because so many people have skin issues. And this is the first show that we have done in the thousands of shows that we have done, because Dr. Zamperon and I started doing radio in the late 1970s. And, of course, at that time, our shows were only on the air. Well, those shows are still on the air to this day. And then we added in other shows, such as this one, The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And this one, of course, is an Internet-based show. And we have over 150,000 people who download it regularly, which is fantastic. We'd love to hear from all of you about what you'd like to hear about here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And we have a wonderful guest today, Dr. Alan Dattner, MD, who is a holistic and integrative dermatologist based on fact, not fiction. He is a deeply involved and well and deeply trained conventional dermatologist and researcher, and he has researched such things as at the National Cancer Institute. So I love your viewpoint, and thank you so much for being our guest on our show today, Dr. Dattner. I really want to focus on your book, because with as brilliant as you obviously are, and I think at times I've had to do what I do with my illustrious co-host, Dr. Eugene Zamperon, who's a brilliant naturopathic physician, and sometimes on the radio show, he'll go into discussions that are excellent, as you have, but I have to bring down his language a little bit, like you and I have done, so that just anyone listening can understand that. But in your book, I have to say that although you address some of these very high-level topics, it's really done for the general public.
Yes, exactly.
So anybody can grab a copy of Radiant Skin from the inside out and really learn a lot. Now, I need to ask you about these illustrations. Don't tell me you're also an illustrator.
No, I'm not an illustrator, but I did do the rough sketches And then I had was very fortunate to find a young illustrator in L.A. who I worked with by phone and internet, and he put them together the way I like them.
They are fantastic, because I have written a book on arthritis, which goes into the autoimmune response, and I just did an 8-hour presentation on autoimmunity through Health Masters Live. So in our slides, we do have these kinds of illustrations, but not as good as this. These are so clear and excellent. I suggest everyone get a copy of Radiant Skin from the Inside Out by Dr. Alan Dattner. That's Dattner. If for no other reason than to understand what's going on with gut permeability and autoimmune response and the immune tolerance. These are very complex topics that really affect many, many people, and you've done a beautiful job of the illustrating it.
Oh, thank you very much. Well, you know, it was really important for me to lay out a blueprint of how all this works. How did I go about treating an individual with an inflammatory skin condition who otherwise would be given either topical steroids or other even oral anti-inflammatory medications? You know, one says, well, how do you do that? And most of my colleagues don't really have a good idea how to do the whole process. And certainly patients have very little idea of how, of what's involved. And indeed, unfortunately, it's a different perspective. It really involves an investment, which involves changing diet, changing lifestyle, sometimes not hanging out with the same people if they're eating the wrong kind of food on a constant basis or smoking or doing all kinds of unhealthy things. And, of course, taking supplements and getting care from somebody who can spend enough time with them to really figure out what's going on and show them the way. So
now, let me ask you this. We talked about psoriasis. That's an intense thing. But isn't this also works even faster for more common, less deeply involved things, such as acne?
It works very well for acne, and indeed that's probably the majority of the people I see, or at least the largest group of people I see, are people with acne, many of whom have had temporary success with conventional care or not, and often have been set back in the long run by the conventional care, whether it was long-term antibiotics or birth control pills, all of which led to overgrowth of yeast in their gut and leaky gut, and then they start becoming sensitive to all kinds of foods that normal people, quote, normal, can get away with eating, or they could before. And so by unwinding and unraveling this whole network of problems that have developed, I can bring them back to normal skin. And many of these people also come to me because they've noticed that they have other symptoms. They have bloating, they have irritable bowel, they have reflux, they have chronic fatigue. And so in the process of clearing up their acne, those other issues clear up as well. And that's what, one of the things that makes it so satisfying. I'm not just fixing their acne. I'm changing their trajectory through life.
Now, in terms of leaky
gut,
I want to bring up one thing about leaky gut. I can't believe it, but, you know, when we're speaking to physicians, as I'm sure you know, you can't say leaky gut. You have to say intestinal permeability, which is the exact same thing. I actually, to this day, have doctors saying to me, I don't believe in leaky gut, like it's a religion.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Well, but if I say intestinal permeability and show them all the studies from the literature that link the breakdown of the lining to autoimmune disease, which is like thousands of literature references, then we can talk about it.
Yeah,
it's
there are certain things that are very inflammatory. It's like lighting a fuse, and people go ballistic. A physician,
yeah, candida
do.
Is another one.
What's that? Oh, yeah, candida. Well, you know, some of this. There are certainly people in the blogosphere who carry this to an extreme, waving a flag and calling things, you know, they'll call this something candida, and then they have a very detailed program and diet, which may well be useful for candida, but also really embodies other things like food allergy or histamine or other things that they happen to have observed in specific cases, and that becomes their, that becomes under their flag for candida. So it's, that's one reason I've defined a lot of things in the book, is I want people to understand, you know, what might be candida and what else might be leading to what was originally in the literature called antigenic translocation across the intestinal membrane. That was what the early legal literature show called
it. Translocation, right.
Yeah. So,
well, that's so true.
You know, it's important to understand not just that there's a picture that might be treated and called this, but also that that what somebody is labeling as something may also embody other things. And the reason it's important is because for a given individual, their problem may embody other things, not just the leaky gut. It's also specific allergens that are setting them off. It's specific things that are causing their gut to be more leaky, like gluten. You know, I want to cite Fasano's work in that regard, who's spoken a lot about that and now is using the term leaky gut. And, you know, he's at Harvard now. They liked him. So it's becoming, it's going to be getting into the mainstream more and more, I think.
Well, thank God, because it is, do you agree with me, and we're going to have to wrap this up soon, unfortunately, but do you agree with me that what you're talking about, it does not need to be called complementary or alternative. It should be called good evidence-based medicine.
I think it should be. I think it should be called the best medicine when you take something like a skin problem that's inflammatory and you look at it not just as a disease but as a symptom of something that's underlying that has to be addressed and dealt with. And
well,
this is
so
really a better way of practicing medicine, to keep digging to the bottom of the problem and allowing an individual to go along a better and better path so that they have a more joyous and healthy life.
So let's end, Dr. Dattner, with you telling our listeners the best way to get in touch with you, and I do want to mention the book is Radiant Skin. Get a copy.
Oh, great. Okay. Radiant Skin from the Inside Out can be purchased on Amazon, and it's available in book form and in online and downloadable form, and it will be launching on February 22nd. If anybody wants to wait that long for the discount, I think anybody who's really excited will want to get it sooner. My website, holisticdermatology.com with an H, is a very good way to find out more about me, my background, my research, a lot of recommendations we make, to also a way to contact me if they're interested in an appointment or some other reason to contact me. There's a way to fill out a form and so we can get back to you.
We have to end there, Doctor. Thank you so much for being our guest today, and thank you, listeners, for joining us for another edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Find us at naturalnurse.com or Facebook The Natural Nurse. Until next time, this is Ellen Calley, hoping that you stay healthy.